and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham, and we've all got a little bit of a dose of cup fever in association with Flowers Unlimited. Yes, that's right, we are quarter-final bound after Danny Welbeck's extra-time goal gave us victory over Newcastle at St James's Park for the second time this season. And it saw us book a last eight place at home against either Nottingham Forest or Ipswich. We're recording this on Monday. It was also our fifth win in a row, which will see us go into this weekend's game of Fulham full of confidence. However, Fulham will also be full of confidence after booking a quarter-final place themselves. And the fact that we've never beaten the Cottagers in the top flight game means we're going to have to break that particular hoodoo. Also this week, the club have released the accounts for the 2023-24 season, and the headline news is that we have posted a £73 million profit. So, who better to join myself and Alan Wares than a spreadsheet nerd, an accounting boffin, a man whose relationship with Marmite needs investigating? It's a huge war. Welcome back to Kieran Maguire. Hello, Kieran.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I trust
you know what you need
well.
For your Marmite addiction, don't you?
Well, my wife made me a Marmite and cheese loaf over the weekend. And for anybody who is a Marmite fan, it is off the scale.
Is it?
It is absolutely. It's a sharing loaf. So it's, you know, you sort of pick out the little.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Oh, it is pure heaven for yeast.
What was the cheese?
Some strong cheddar.
Was there any little... Well, I suppose if you've got the Marmite, you don't need any rosemary with it, really, do you? But
no. Another point would be is that at the end of this recording, I will be asking Mrs. Maguire for that recipe, because cheese and Marmite bread sounds absolutely... Oh, it's basically a sandwich that makes itself, isn't it? But well, I didn't realise that was really your stipulation as to what Kieran's relationship with Marmite was really all about. But
I was trying to tee him up to like get a Cure reference in there, but it was
close enough.
But you know, these things matter. Anyway, Kieran, you're looking a little bit peaky there. I mean, have you got a little bit of cup fever?
Yes, but I sort of didn't have cup fever. Because I decided to give Newcastle a miss, mainly due to the fact that there was one train out of Brighton, well, certainly one train out of Wadhurst that would have got me to St James's Park before kickoff, and it was £210 return, as well as the fact that I'm commuting to and from Liverpool, so I don't actually get to see Mrs. M very often. So I took her out for a meal in Brighton, and I'm not plugging anything here. If you want the best Sunday roast that you'll ever have in Brighton, I strongly recommend a trip to Kindling. It was incredible. So I said, I'm not interested in the football. You know, I'm not going to look at my phone. I've not seen you for a few days. I'm going to try to be the appropriate husband and focus on the other love of my life. So to be fair to Gail, after half an hour, she says, well, I'll take a quick look at the phone. And she says, oh, the Albion are losing. And actually, that was the best thing, because if you're losing, you sort of there's no tension. There's no hope. There's no gnawing of the fingernails. And then 15 minutes later, she said, oh, the Albion have just equalised. And that was fine. We finished the meal, caught the train back to Lewis, set off in the car for home. And right, I said, I'll listen to it on the radio now. Gordon got sent off, got my hopes up. Tarik got sent off. Hopes went down, and then the free kick came in, and Shah scored. And she turned off the radio. She said, "I'm not prepared." So we assumed that we'd lost. So we got home. We went home in sort of silence. I went out to the garage to get my bicycle. I thought I'll go out for a bicycle ride. And she shouted me back in. It's 1-1. I go, what? We'd assumed that we'd lost the game. So I rushed back in and watched the second half of extra time. And what a finish from Danny Welbeck. What inspired substitutions? Because if you think it was Gruder to March to Welbeck, I don't think Fabian gets enough plaudits, full stop, but he certainly doesn't get enough plaudits for the fact that he's willing to change things around and make tough decisions. And I was absolutely giddy. And the only downside for the rest of the day was the interminable and absolutely tedious Manchester United versus Fulham match, where the standard was poor, and having to wait the extra half hour for extra time, and then a further wait during penalties, because all that we cared about, and I suspect all any Albion fans cared about, was the draw.
It was, and it was. I mean, Al, for the second time, well, 2 games in a row, this was very much like the Bournemouth game, a brilliant watch for the neutral. Unfortunately, we're not neutral.
Well, I think probably, well, obviously with the Bournemouth game, I was there for Newcastle game. I watched it on telly. Maybe there's different perspectives that you get from that. I actually thought we played better against Newcastle than we did against Bournemouth, despite the BBC website person saying that when we equalised, it was, we'd spent most of the game with our backs to the wall. Not sure what game he was watching, but it clearly wasn't that. It was an even Stevens game. It was a good cup tie. No quarter asked, no quarter given. I mean, and apart from Anthony
You're
Gordon's,
wrong there, Al. The winner did win a quarter.
don't
Final.
make me edit things.
Yeah,
And apart from Anthony Gordon's, well, I was going to say Flash Gordon's flash of stupidity, it wasn't a particularly wild game. There were some tackles that went in. There were some yellows that were given that shouldn't have been. There was probably some one or two yellows that could have been given that weren't. It was good crash bang wallop stuff. I mean, someone pointed out about two-thirds of the way through the game there's only three shots on target, but you wouldn't have known that. All you know is two fairly evenly matched teams just going crashing into each other. And I loved it for it, but it's interesting hearing Kieran's tale of it, and he wasn't even watching, and even he sounded wrung out by it, even as much as he was trying to ignore it. I was watching, and by the end of the extra time, by the time the final whistle went, I was totally spent. Because if nothing else, penalties is just horrible. But I'm also thinking, well, when you see who's left in the cup, there are now, and I even when I say Manchester City are not the force this season they have been, and therefore are beatable, there are seven teams who genuinely feel they're going to have a real chance to win the cup, or at least at this stage, are going to have as good a chance as they've ever had of winning it for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Kieran, there is a very good chance that there will be, for the first time in history, a new name on the cup. Obviously, we've never won anything. Fulham haven't won anything particularly. I think Fulham, I'm sure Fulham won the FA Cup,
Fulham have
haven't they?
been the, Fulham got to the FA Cup final in 1975,
Yeah.
lost 2-0 to West Ham. They had Bobby Moore and Alan Mullery playing for them.
But yeah, no, Bournemouth haven't.
Bournemouth
Villa
haven't even
haven't
got
for a
that
very
right.
long time. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's exciting. It's nice to see that there's. I mean, everyone talks about the top six, and obviously, I mean, obviously, we can talk to you about the finances that go into this. And but this year, there's a new world order in football. The establishment is being challenged, to nick a phrase from Fabian.
It is to a certain extent, but if you take a look at the top three in the Premier League, it's Liverpool, Arsenal, and Manchester City, who were pretty much the top three last season. There has been some spectacularly poor performance for a variety of reasons, none of which are financial, from other members of the Big Six. And it's great that we do now have, I think, what we can genuinely call challenger clubs, the likes of Newcastle United, Aston Villa, fair play to Forest this season. And also, the way the Albion, Bournemouth have been playing some superb football, as have Fulham. It's good, but we are still fighting over the minor places.
I'm
I mean,
gonna.
is it a mo well, I mean, obviously the
Can I just
chances
cut
of.
in with a stat here, AD?
Yeah,
We're
sure,
just,
go on.
you were saying about clubs that haven't won the cup for a long time or ever. Obviously, there's Man City who just keep on winning it. But of all those left, and I'm going to include Forest and Ipswich, like, as you say, we're recording as the game starts. So you've got Ipswich in 1978. Of those teams left, Ipswich in 1978. Nottingham Forest in 1959, Aston Villa in 1957 are the most recent wins by those clubs. And for the rest that are left, well, Preston is, crikey, 19, what, 37, something like that. And then you've got Fulham, Palace and Bournemouth and us have never won it. So this is probably the best chance to do it. But please, well, let's put it this way. At the very least, if Man City do mossy their way to the final, and I've never really wanted to count on Bournemouth to do anything, but wouldn't it be nice for football if they did? Then Manchester City will at least not, it won't be a final where you think, oh, big six against big six, because they're rarely decent spectacles. Whereas when you've got two teams who are, as Kieran says, in the next echelon, they were the ones who'd be going at hammer and tongs. I don't think too many people would have minded if, you know, yesterday's game against Newcastle would have been the final. At the very least, you know, it's two teams that are going for it, and it would have made for a decent spectacle, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but having listened to various broadcasts this morning, did you know that Anthony Gordon's going to miss the Carabao Cup final? I never knew. I mean, I've been enlightened by many, many people about this. Apparently, nothing else happened.
Does that include Sam Matterface, who mentioned it as soon as he was walking off?
No, Sam doesn't matter face, as I like to call him. Yes.
No, it was, well, that's neither here nor there, although it was quite amusing when Eddie Howe said they were going to challenge it. I don't know if they have, I don't know if they will. Again, it's
Wouldn't
the
that be
nature of this.
frivolous? I mean, that I found out
Well, they
also
do
today that,
risk. Yes, they do risk getting
well,
an
apparently that's
extra.
no longer a thing.
Is it not?
But I'd need to check. I was listening to I was one of the shows I was listening to say that the frivolous thing no longer exists. But
Well, that's a shame because I think it would stop some really stupid ones, wouldn't it?
but yeah, I mean, well, I want to talk about the technology involved in this game a little bit later on. But let's get into some of the nuts and bolts of it. Alexander Isak, he is one hell of a player, Kieran.
He is, Newcastle have done very well to secure his services in the first place. And I can understand Newcastle fans thinking, well, we've got Alexander Isak. This now sets the benchmark for the players that we're going to recruit in future windows. Yeah, I think he costs close to £60 million. Looks an absolute bargain. An excellent elite athlete. The best thing that Newcastle can do this summer is to secure him on a new long-term contract and pay him the going rate. Now, he, I suspect, will not want to do that unless he until he knows where Newcastle finish at the end of this season, because a player at that level has an expectation to play, I think, at Champions League level, and you can understand why he's being coveted both in the Premier League and elsewhere. So, yeah, magnificent player, has played superbly well, and is incredibly popular.
But I was led to believe, Kieran, that Newcastle are the richest club in the world.
It depends how you determine rich. It depends how you determine wealth. Certainly, as far as the owners are concerned, they have greater wealth than any other club owners. We do have a set of rules which were introduced, and I don't know where I've heard the phrase unintended consequences come from, but the unintended consequences of the cost control rules that we presently have in football means that it is very, very difficult for a challenger club, or I'll use that phrase, to replicate what we've seen at Chelsea under Roman Abramovich. Roman Abramovich lost £900,000 a week for 19 years at Chelsea, but he got to see his club win, what, five Premier Leagues, five FA Cups, two Champions Leagues. So as a trophy asset, he did get a return on the investment. And also what happened at Manchester City under Sheikh Mansour. And, you know, we were partial beneficiaries of that. If you think about when Wayne Bridge came to the Albion, they were paying 90% of his wages. You know, he got to stretch his legs at the Amex for a season, and you know, he was a very good player as we
Yeah, it was
saw.
excellent for us, yeah.
Player of the season. Yeah.
Well,
All right. So, I mean, if you're going to look that way, and I think this is a gripe. If you're talking about sort of like the riches of a club is one thing. I mean, you could say Stoke City is richer than us because the Coates family are well, I think they're in the top five of the richest people in the country. So it's not all about how rich your owner is, it's what they're able to do with the money.
Yeah.
And whilst Tony Bloom is rich, he doesn't actually own an entire state.
Okay, well, one of the things that happened to Newcastle with the current rules is basically with the PSR situation is they had to try and move some players on in order to make some money. Now, one of those players was still playing for him, and then he was playing for us. So that was nice. Now, obviously, we're talking about Yankuba Minteh. He had a little bit of a funny 5 minutes giving away the penalty, and then he scored. Brilliant.
Yeah, not his finest moment, was it? He was a little bit asleep there. So as much as we've been crediting him with getting back and helping out the defence, he was a little bit asleep there. It was a penalty, clear. No one's going to complain about it. I mean, even the way he stuck he's done it twice in a row now, I think, that his shirt over his head. He did it at Southampton where he kept on missing those sitters, and then he did it again at Newcastle where he gave away a penalty he really didn't need to challenge for. If you're going to be that far out of position, then just make sure you can't do anything stupid. So,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking, really, Kieran.
it was a strange one. I think perhaps we'd had an inkling that his decision making in the own third was not his strength at the Bournemouth game where he did those two kicks 60 feet up into the air in the own box, which was one of the things you don't expect from an elite professional athlete.
To be
It's the
fair,
sort of thing we used to.
a Sunday League player wouldn't be able to do that. So,
Well, no,
yes,
it's the
I
sort of thing
would.
we used to do as kids when we were trying to kick a ball over telegraph wires.
Yes.
It
Well,
was
this
like.
is it. I mean, to this day, I don't think a ball has left the Amex Stadium. We've never got one on the roof. I think, it's all
Leo
been
Ojea
keeping it on
tried.
into the second. Even Ojoa's penalty. As much as we say it's in orbit, it was stopped by the North Stand wall. But yeah, we mentioned it last week, and I have seen the footage since, and it is as funny as I remember it first time. It was. Can you actually, either of you, can remember anything just as silly and as funny, which thankfully we got away with?
Oh, there's probably many, many things, and I'm a bit like Yankuba's, like interesting keepy uppy, shall we say?
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
No,
No,
I can't think of
I mean
anything.
the only other one that my good friend Chaz was talking about, and then it was an incident that if you don't remember it, you don't remember it. But there was, I think it was Will Buckley and Craig McHale-Smith, and I'm not sure if they were, I think yeah, it was just a case of Buckley running down the wing with the ball, and CMS decided to go to it and absolutely wiped Buckley out. Think, why did you go there? Why did you try and get the ball? Why did you clatter our own player, giving them the possession? It was as if to say, well, I'm still playing for Peterborough.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, well, Isak stood up and he took the penalty, and it was a great penalty. I mean, there's a brilliant image of Bart's dive. He wasn't gonna get it, and it was at full length. And there's a lot of length to Bart, and he was getting absolutely nowhere near that. It was like a great penalty. And then shortly after, Isak had the ball in the back of the net again. This one was offside. Now, I do want to talk about offsides here because, okay, admittedly, we are beneficiaries of this right now because that goal was at the end of the game, and injury time was disallowed. I don't really want to see goals disallowed by that small margin. I mean, if you can't see it by the naked eye, it's
Well,
just
to be
like,
fair, the
I know
first.
it's the rules, Al. I know
Hang
it's
on,
the
hang on. Are
rules.
you talking about the first one or the second one?
No, the first one, that was clearly offside. There was
Yeah,
daylight.
and the linesman flagged for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, do we really want to see the Joy Stealers at Stockley Park do it for that small amount of margin? I mean, like I said, we're the beneficiary, so I
Let's
think we can
face
be
it, not
magnanimous
having
about it, but
VAR against Norwich benefited Solly March.
yeah, absolutely. It
So,
was
yeah, I don't know. It's what people have asked for. I mean, it's and I still say this. I don't know if you actually let's get yours, Kieran, because I might go off on one, and it's probably best that I don't. So,
Well, my view is the issue is not VAR, the issue are the laws of the game. And in an environment where we can now have a greater degree of precision in terms of determining where a player is compared to another player, there is a case for saying that we need to have a change in the laws of the game itself relating to offside. Because where would you say, AD, you would have been happy for that to have been allowed to be as a goal? If you're going to say, well, 10 centimetres, well, why not 12 centimetres? There's always got to be a dividing line. Now, there's a case for saying, and I think Arsene Wenger, in the course of the last week or two, has been suggesting some changes
Yeah,
to
I've
the
seen this.
offside rule. Should there now be clear blue water between, historically it's just been ahead. Should you have to be, if there is a gap, a physical gap of a person, should that be revised? But even so, there's still going to be positions where somebody is 1 centimeter onside or 1 centimeter offside. And it does take away some of the joy of the game in exactly the same way as if we go back to our first season in the Premier League and Pascal Gross's goal against Manchester United, which was a goal by a centimeter. And under old rules, it would have been based on the linesman's flag and probably wouldn't have been given. So there has to be a dividing line if you're going to have any type of rule that that involves gaps between or distances.
I mean, it is a popular misnomer, Al, that the daylight rule was something that never actually existed.
I don't think it ever came in anyway. I think it was just something people talked about. I think Arsene Wenger's thing, wasn't it, was about the position of the feet, not so much the upper body. It was more about the position of the feet.
I think Wenger's thing was making the lines wider. So
Well, there's
basically,
that that's been talking about, and I understand that that was actually brought in initially in the Netherlands, that they did that, and then they thought, well, actually, we prefer the British model, and the British model still hasn't been sorted out. Plus, what also doesn't help is that, okay, people want to eradicate VAR to a certain extent, insofar as, are you going to? I mean, like I say, the Newcastle fans went absolutely loopy and then had their fun cut out 2 minutes later. But also, and it's not the case here because I think VAR was used correctly, is that it's not always used correctly. And not necessarily just for offside, but in terms of either the VAR getting involved in decisions they shouldn't have done, looking at the penalty against Everton, not getting involved in things they should have done, like about half a dozen instances at Spurs a couple of years ago. It's about sort of like the correct usage of it, and you'd have to be an automaton to get it right every time because it's a video assistant referee. Even if it was a video additional referee, you'd still have the human error of the person in question, even if they've got screens to look at.
I mean, we had a goal disallowed a couple of years ago for Kari Mitoma's foot being offside when he's running in the other direction.
Oh, you. Well, you saying about that, that one was actually correct. It's not the direction you're running in. It's where you
It's not
start
close. I mean,
from.
so it's all about, are you gaining an advantage
Yes, he
by.
did because he scored from it. So I think it was quite an advantage he gained. And I know you were going to say there was one against Arsenal. It was against Arsenal and it would have brought us to 4-3, with anyway, my point is it's VAR has its place, provided it's used properly. But if you're talking about the nature of offside, then in order for it to be considered fair, the arbitrariness that Kieran was talking about of daylight or 5 centimeters or 10 centimeters has to come from somewhere. If it happens to be 5.5 centimeters, well, that's not within the spirit of the rules. Yes, but a line must be drawn somewhere, and how thick that line is something that people won't agree on.
I know. It's just something that I just felt. I felt we got away with one there,
Yeah, but he
frankly.
was offside.
It was
That's the point.
offside, but it was like I say. I would like to see the. I would like to see wider lines. I'd like to see like the striker,
But it
the
was about his
forward.
shoulder. It was his shoulder. I love the graphic. It actually showed Van Hecke's arse. That was the thing that was the last line of defence.
Well, he's the best looking Dutchman I know, so you
Well,
know
exactly, and maybe his backside is a better looking. But my point is that it's
Just
because
move on
Shah
from
was
there.
leaning forward, therefore his shoulder
Okay.
was offside, and that's where you think, okay, well, what part of the body does constitute offside? At
Yeah.
the moment, we have it whereby it's a part that's legally you can legally score a goal. I
Okay.
don't think that's a bad metric to use, but if it means that someone, because they're leaning forward. You know, that's you can't have it always.
I mean, I think, I mean, Kieran's right. I mean, we had this discussion on the show many times before, but the offside rule was brought in to basically stop goal hanging, and the law it was not designed to be micromanaged in the way that it is now. So basically, either VAR changes or the law changes, and I think it's actually the law that needs to be rewritten to bring it into line
Well,
with the modern
then you get
technology.
into the point of would VAR get that right as well? And
Well,
we
of
could
course they
then
won't.
take this to
Oh,
the
well,
nth degree.
the idea was it's meant to stop arguments in the pub, and we're still having them.
Oh
So
no,
there you
we no, we've, we it continues the argument. It just changes the subject.
go. Indeed. Okay, well, we did equalise, and it was Yankuba who actually made amends for his earlier mistake. We're playing a neat little 1-2 with João Pedro, and he finished it. I mean, there was some saying that Trippier is a Trippier own goal, but it's a shot on target.
Was it
So
in the end, was it given to Minto?
no, it was basically because this shot was going on target.
So it was credited to him.
It has been
Right.
credited to him, yeah.
Kieran, this is
But
as much as we talk about VAR at the moment, we're also still in sort of heated debates or common debates about Minto. How give us your lowdown on his first two thirds of a season here.
He's very young. He is a developing talent. He's incredibly exciting to watch. Is his decision making perfect? No, it isn't. But at the same time, if he was that good, he'd cost far more than £30 million in today's transfer market. So I think he's taken a wee bit of time to acclimatize to life at the Albion, but he's an incredibly promising player. In a position where there is a lot of competition. You know, we've got Garuda, we've got Adringa, we've got Solly coming back, we've got Mitoma. So I think he has started to make that place his own. He's one of those players that when he gets the ball, he gets the crowd on their feet, especially if it's in the final third. Are there things that he can do better? Absolutely. But then if we all go back to when we were 19 or 20 and compare ourselves to a few years later, that's you learn on the job, and ultimately it's going to come down to him now. I think the downsides, some of the decision making on defending side of things aren't great, but then neither was Gary. Yeah, Gary Lineker wasn't a great defender, and he was an okay player. The only sl slight reservation, and I think it's been handled very well, is okay, if you want to be a professional athlete, if you want to go and play at the elite end of the Premier League, turn up on time.
Yeah, get yourself a watch, son. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's and it's the kind of thing you get sort of fined quite heavily for. And no, it's an age-old thing. And people say, oh, we're cutting off your nose to spite your face. No, you have that discipline. You know, it's been there since day one. No, you turn up on time, son. Yeah,
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
suffer
Okay, well, that
consequences.
was that. We went in 1-1 at half time, and it was a decent display in the first half, but a better second half display, as is our wont of late. And we had a lot more chances. Pedro had a great chance. He latched onto a misplaced pass and lashes a shot, which Dubravka had to save. And then we got the Gordon red card. I'm not allowed to say what I think about Gordon's hair, but
What,
yes.
the Prince of Our Hearts?
It is definitely modelled on the Prince of Our Hearts. That's
It
what it
is, yeah. It's no,
is.
it's like I say, it was out of keeping with the rest of the game. I thought that the game was fought in a particularly good spirit. You know, like I say, two teams evenly matched. Then I think they're pretty close to each other in the table, and they both had designs on. on going further. The only thing I'd say about, and this I think the gripe that some Newcastle fans have at the moment, is they're playing within themselves. Now, they've got their cup final coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and it's understandable that players are not necessarily going to give that 110% cliche that their managers want them to give, because they want to play at Wembley in a cup final. And as such, I'm just wondering, there's no point in actually sort of considering it too much, because I don't know how well Newcastle played as to how they normally play. But yes, you're right, Adi, we were better in the second half, although it wasn't that clear and obvious as to what it was that made us better. I think, if anything, Newcastle slackened off a little bit.
They now look tired.
They did. You're right, they did. And we seem to have a bunch of sort of super fit sort of kids who, like Danny Welbeck and Adam Webster, who just sort of kept going. And at this point, we'll talk about Gordon in a minute, but at this point, we're talking about kids. I just want to say, I think that for the 120 minutes, he kept going like a Duracell bunny. I thought Jack Hinshelwood was absolutely outstanding. Does anyone go with me on that?
Yes, and it's noticeable that with the one exception of the game when he first returned, his return to the first team and his availability has had a significant impact upon the improvement in results that we've seen. I think he's becoming one of those players that's doing an awful lot of the dirty work, which perhaps we don't appreciate, but he's got an eye for goal, even though he's not been goal scoring this season, as he did last season. I think he's superb in the bottom third. Some of his blocks were excellent. I think the biggest problem with Jack is working out where his best position is. He
Yeah.
clearly wants to play alongside Carlos in centre midfield. That's great in a way, and it makes it harder for Ayari, for Vifa. Matt O'Reilly's not getting a game these days, because Jorginho has really come to the fore as well. But that's great. I mean, I looked at that bench, going back to what you were talking about, I think part of the reason is that we've got so many options that the club, the side can be changed, which isn't going to weaken the 11 that's on the pitch at any one moment in time, or the
Yeah,
10.
well, the last few great performances from Jack have been in front of the England manager. Could he get a call up?
In Sometimes your face doesn't fit.
truth, no. Under 21s, he should retain his berth for another 2 years. But
I don't know where he'd fit in that setup anyway. But I mean,
well, you've got several options.
there's been talk this weekend that Danny Welbeck's going to get a call up. So,
Yeah.
because I mean, at the end of the day, he's got one job, and it's not to bring through the kids; it's to win the next World Cup. So, if it's gonna, it might be a case of bringing in the expendables to get the job done.
Can't see it, but wouldn't it be great, etc.
I would not want it, really. I mean, Danny, obviously, he'd be absolutely thrilled, but with his injury record, we want to try and keep him as fresh as possible.
And Jack, I think, is as much as we know that, it was brilliant on Sunday. There's a talent there, and it's not. No, I mean, Kieran's points about, he was saying about his work rate, the blocking, the eye for goal, but also his work rate in midfield. I mean, there was a couple of times where he was doing a couple of cheeky little back heels, and I'm thinking, hang on, you're English, what are you doing? It looked absolutely wonderful, and he looks so at home. And it's. Yeah, I think personally centre midfield is his should be his berth, but I've got no problem if he wants to play at fullback, because he does such a good job there as well.
I
And in fact, when
prefer
he
him at
came on against
fullback.
Bournemouth, I thought he actually sort of tidied up that left back role and just sort of brought a bit of calm to it. Sorry, you were talking about the Prince of our hearts. It was out of keeping with that. The weird thing is that he cuffed Van Hecke, who, let's face it, went down like a sack of strawberries, as if he'd been hit by someone a little bit bigger than Anthony Gordon. But the stupid thing is, the referee had already blown for offside, so why did he carry on?
It was just utter
It's
head loss, really, wasn't it? I mean, we've seen that a lot. We've seen that a lot this weekend. I mean, I don't know if you saw Cunha's red card for Wolves at the weekend. He just completely lost the plot.
No, I haven't, but no.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I mean,
But
I think in terms of Anthony Gordon, there was probably a hangover that he felt that he'd had a shout for a penalty probably 60 or 90 seconds beforehand, and he was still chuntering about that. It was out of character. I think he's a very good player. From my sources on Merseyside, he's also a thoroughly nice young man.
Yeah.
What I did find about it was seeing the footage, is that there's sort of like the hubbub and the players surrounding Van Hecker on the floor, and then they go to the referee. Is that Gordon is actually sort of pointing to Van Hecker on the floor and laughing at him, going ha ha ha, what do you think you're doing? And then he looks up and he sees that Anthony Taylor's given him a red card, and he can't believe it. Hang on, mate, you cuffed him. It wasn't violent, and it certainly wasn't as bad as Jan Paul was making out. But it was enough to say that is a red card motion.
Okay, but it wasn't the only red card of the game, and there wasn't one for Tarik Lamptey. I felt a little bit sorry for him to a certain degree. I mean, he's worked really hard to get back to fitness, really hard to get back into the team. Yes, there have been mistakes in some of his performances, but he's largely been absolute live wire and wonderful to watch, and he's been a brilliant addition to the team. And now he's going to have to sit one out, and well, Veltman might be back. Hinch might will could fill in
Hinch can
there,
cover
but
him, can't he?
is he going to get back in the team?
The thing about both yellow cards is that they were on the back or chasing after mistakes that he'd made in the first place. Trying to get the ball back from either a poor control or, a wrong ways turn. And yeah, I mean, I don't think any Brighton fans have got a problem with the two yellow cards. Someone was saying, oh, the second one that the Newcastle play didn't even touch him. Well, the lunge, I mean, it wasn't a violent lunge, far from it, but it was a lunge that was enough.
Oh, they're both yellow cards. I can't argue with it, but
No,
it's
but it's just one of those things. But if he tamps out that mistake, then he won't need to go in for that second challenge. But if we're talking about challenges, then can we just actually, Kieran, tip our, I don't know if you've seen it yet, tip our hat towards Van Hecker's challenge, which was somewhere between American football, rugby, and ice hockey.
was wonderful.
He's a wonderful human being. And again, I think there's a broader issue in Van Hecke. I think there's a really good thread on North Stand chat about him. He was recruited from the second division of Dutch football. What other club is doing their home? I mean, Brentford are, to be fair. What other club is doing their homework that thoroughly? And you've got to give the people at the club a huge amount of credit
Absolutely.
for being able to bring on players like him.
I mean, he was always a work in progress. I mean, went out on loan to Blackburn for a year. Blackburn fans still absolutely love him. He was player of the season. They absolutely, I think it was part menace, part flying studs. And then when he came back to us, there was a couple of games where he was a little bit wanting. I think it was a game against Leicester where he left someone alone at the back post, and he was almost beating himself up over it. And you think, well, it's a bit like Minto, we mentioned earlier, learning on the job, and his advancement to the point that, again, we were chatting with Hans Cray last week, and I say Ronald Koeman was at the Chelsea game, and I think it's probably fair to say that Van Hecker is about to be cast into the role of Dutch regular in the national team. It's probably not. I'm not really sort of saying anything there, but he's promoted himself, or he's been promoted by the manager to such an extent, because of his performances, that he is. You think, who do you play alongside Van Dijk? Well, it's him now.
Get in the vans. Right. Okay. So we did get a winner in this game. It came late on, and as we've already mentioned, it did stop us going to penalties, which was a massive relief. And as Kieran pointed out, it was a combination of three of our subs. Lovely to see Solly get an assist, and what a finish from Welbeck. I mean, what are we calling that? Are we calling it a dink? Are we calling it a scoop?
I'm more in the scoop camp myself. Because he really had to lift that, because a dink just goes over the goalkeeper. This one was that much higher.
Can I call it a contorted scoop? Because I mean, he really had to twist his body because the ball had just, even probably only by a foot, got away from him. But the control from that, so I'm going to say a contorted scoop, which
I know,
really
it was
sounds
absolute
painful.
limbs in the stadium and in pubs and front rooms up and down the country. It was just Mental.
Did
I
you
mean, it was just a
dance
relief
among
not to go to penalties, I
did you
think.
dance amongst yourself, AD?
No, I did. Me and Maisie the dog did a little bit of a bounce.
Yeah, but the thing is, when you're watching that, you daren't. I mean, you daren't go too mad because you think, well, it's still 6 minutes to go. And I mean, Kieran, we've got a
I was
history
shocked,
of.
though. I think I was more shocked. Cause it just kind of like I thought it just felt like the clock was being run down,
I
and
thought
that
the
the
clock had stopped. You know,
no,
once we
that
got
was
that.
Welbeck's goal last week, but
Yeah, well, I
which
thought the
still
clock had
hasn't gone in,
stopped.
by the way.
Yes, yeah, oh, quite, yeah. But yeah, I mean, at what point with times like that, Kieran, do you go mad? Is it the goal, or is it the full time, or is it both?
We're certainly at the goal. I must confess, I thought the way that we managed the game after scoring the second goal was superb. The Geordie fans got behind their team, and you're expecting it to now be sort of Alamo style defending, but the players were extremely confident, extremely secure. They played their triangles, they passed their way, and it didn't allow Newcastle to get any momentum into that final 5 minutes. And I mean, I think you mentioned earlier, they did look tired, but in extra time, and I think the way that the players played was fantastic there.
Okay. Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are brought to you in association with the wonderful Flowers Unlimited. Al, it's
One
Mother's
seven
Day
five
coming
to one
up.
seven 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, for all your floral needs, all of them.
Yeah.
Unless you don't want to use them, but we suggest you do because they are kindly sponsors of this show. Dave Costa, massive Albion fan, genuinely and generously sponsors the Albion Roar. Thank you, Dave. But it's not just flowers. At the end of the month, we've got Mother's Sunday, and you can buy all sorts of wonderful gifts, wrapped or unwrapped. It's entirely up to you because they do both. So yes, do head to 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove, or go to flowersbrighton.co.uk. And if you obviously let them know that you're an Albion season ticket holder, they're not mind readers, do tell them. You'll get a 20% discount. So knock yourselves out. Thanks again, once again, Dave, for sponsoring the show.
I did hear that Dave was actually looking at doing a special, like, Marmite-based display just for
There's
Kieran,
only
but,
so
you
many
know.
times you can get that gag running, mate.
Okay, well, as we've mentioned there, we are on Radio Reverb, and we have a Reverbathon coming up very soon. Tell us about the Reverbathon now.
Yeah, 12th and 13th of April. Now we know that our games, apart from the FA Cup game, of course, are not going to be subject to television. We can tell you that we'll be live on air, live from the studio, not from our respective bedrooms or our garage. We'll be in the studio at midday on the 12th of April. Do come down to the open market and say hello, provided the Lindy Hoppers aren't blaring out and annoying us. It's been a while, but.
It's been a while.
And you can go and get some bacon, Ada. You just love that bacon stall, don't
Yeah,
you?
and cronuts. I like the
And
cronuts.
there you go.
Yeah.
So yes, it's all about making sure that Radio Reverb can survive as a community radio station. We don't accept advertising, so it's going to be sponsorship donations and grants that the station survives on. So if you could dip into your pocket for the Reverbathon, go to radioreverb.com/donate, and from there. Basically, empty your wallet of whatever you feel like giving us just to help keep this brilliant radio station going. And that
And all,
includes, sorry, us.
yeah, indeed. Okay, and also coming up this now, we can say it's this month now. On Saturday, the 22nd of March, at the Woodside Road in Worthing, there is a charity football match in aid of the Rocking Horse Appeal, who do absolutely brilliant work. Our friend Brett Mendoza is putting together the event, and we've got two teams of Albion Legends and a Celebrities 11. Brett is playing for the Celebrities 11 because he is a local celebrity after all,
He is.
and he's an amazing pub. But it's on Saturday, the 22nd of March. Kickoff is at 2 p.m. Tickets are £12 for adults, £5 for under 18s, and free for under fives. Loads of Albion Legends like coming along on the Albion side. Loads of proper celebs as well, not just Z-listers, proper A-listers. characters in this game. So get yourself along to Woodside Road on the 22nd of March and support the appeal. Now,
can I just say congratulations to everyone who finished the Brighton Half Marathon yesterday. And the reason I specifically say this, and everyone who's done their work for charity, raising funds for what they're doing, that's brilliant. But I would say there's a lovely photo of Brett basically being carted over the line by, oddly enough, the captain of the Celebs 11, Joe Wilkinson.
Joe Wilkinson.
Yep. So, yeah, that was just a kind of a nice touch. But, yeah, good stuff. Do get yourself down to Woodside Road on AD the
22nd of March.
There you go.
We'll be there, won't we?
Well, I'm not. Well, yeah, I'm rude not to.
Yeah. Okay, Kieran, I got a message from you this week and you were very excited. You said, the accounts are out. And so tell us, should we be excited and how much can we say thank you to Chelsea?
Excited? No, nobody should be excited. We don't fall in love, but apart from me, but it's my job to be excited, and I've got no personality, so I get exactly what I deserve on this. They are very impressive. 3 years ago, Brighton Hove Albion were 41st in the all-time list of profitable clubs in the history of the Premier League. After these results, they are now fourth. So that is testament to the way that the club has been run. There are still things to be concerned about. The player trading model is incredible, and that is clearly part of the ethos and the culture of the club. If they hadn't sold any players, they'd have lost £34 million last season. So, you know, that is just how important it is to turn things around. And as you rightly say, huge credit has to be given to Todd Bowley for his willingness to try to recreate what's happening at Brighton Hove Albion without knowing how to recreate culture. And you know, culture trumps strategy all the time. So fantastic. The money coming into the club, it did go up by a lot, but I think, again, you have to be a little bit cautious there. A lot of the £50 million or £55 million of extra money coming in, the vast majority of that was down to work at New Monk's Farm. So that's not really to do with the football club side of things. So just treat that with a degree of caution. More money coming in through the turnstiles because prices went up, and I think we played in Europe four times.
Good fun.
I was going to ask, I mean, how much did the European adventure actually boost the coffers?
We have this very glib saying in the world of finance: revenue is vanity and profit is sanity. So whilst it generated more money, there was more matchday income, TV income went up, despite the fact that the Albion dropped from 6th to 11th in the Premier League table, which cost them £15 million in terms of prize money. That was offset by the money which came into the club through UEFA participation. The wage bill went up significantly because we had to have a bigger squad, because all of a sudden, for the first time in our Premier League history, we had to get used to Sunday, Thursday football. And you can't do that with the calibre of the squad, which got us into Europe in the first place. So there was significant investment in players. There was significant investment in wages in order to achieve that. And that really offset. So I'll be honest, based on my calculations, they didn't actually make any money from being in UEFA, but they didn't lose any either. The way that the system works, I think if the Albion had progressed to the quarters or the semi-finals, then yes, I think there would have been a net gain.
Yeah.
But the way that the club operates is that everything is incentivized, and the players' wages and the wages of the staff. And again, I talked to journalists, and as you're probably aware, that there's a rule that Tony has. His objective is to be top 10 or better. And I think every member of staff gets a bonus if we get into the top 10. We finish 11th. Staff were disappointed with that, as you would expect. Testament to Tony Bloom. He said, look, we got into Europe as well. I'm paying out the bonus, despite the fact that we didn't get into the top 10.
Did he?
What a class act is that guy. And I think some other owners of clubs who seem to be taking a rather mealy-mouthed approach to their staff and punching down and having absolutely zero idea just how important smiles on faces, motivation, and things like that are at football clubs could learn a hell of a lot. But such is the arrogance of these people that they take no notice of clubs like ours.
That, I mean, that, well, we
I'm
know who
just
you're
blown
talking
away.
about.
Sorry, I've got to say this, Adi. I'm just blown away because I did actually think about that. I'm just thinking, well, we haven't heard about that bonus scheme that we'd heard about over the previous couple of years, and it's only obviously what once, twice that we finished in the top 10, if you're going to look at it that way. And they got paid out and what have you. You didn't hear about it, but I suppose we didn't hear about it because it's none of our business. We're not members of staff at the club. But the fact that they did do it. I assumed it was on a level that worked on the assumption that we finished 10th, yeah?
But even so, and again, I'm doing this from conversations with WhatsApp groups with journalists, so I may be wrong, but they wouldn't have said that to me unless they seem to think that was the
Well,
case.
absolutely. No, it's not doubting it. The fact is that, by their own rules, by their own sort of procedures, no bonuses were due. So we paid some bonuses in anyway. Brilliant. I'm
It's
just,
quite,
I'm,
and
yeah,
when you
brilliant.
see about that side from the red side of a city in the northwest of England, it's absolutely appalling how people are being treated there at the moment. And it's like it's not necessarily it's not about always about the people. A football club is a whole gamut of things. It's from the tea lady to the kit man to the chefs. It's everything. You're all pulling in the same direction. And like,
Isn't it interesting that the tea lady is always the lowest common denominator as representing the very bottom? And I'm thinking, well, anyone that makes me a decent cup of tea needs a promotion. So, yeah.
I
But
couldn't
okay, so
possibly come
we're
up.
looking at these headline figures here, Kieran, and let's say they come across as impressive, and I'd say it's probably what the fourth or fifth highest ever sort of profit. Set of figures that have come out. So we're looking at sort of 200 million over a couple of years. But I assume that we're all probably looking at the fact that a fair whack of that has come from, well, like say, the Caicedo transfer,
Money.
the basically the sort of the multi-million pounds one. And at the moment, with the club being on an acquisition drive rather than an off sales drive. It doesn't look as though we're going to necessarily match those figures or even get close to them in the next couple of years unless something happens. Is that your reading?
Yes, I think if you take a look at the summer of 2024, we still remember had the sales of Pascal Gross, Billy Gilmore, and some of the players who people perhaps aren't that familiar with. And I do think that's a route that the club has also got covered. Some other clubs do that spectacularly well, selling players in the because they are a big name club, selling players in sort of the 4 to 10 million pound bracket, which doesn't create any fuss. Chelsea are excellent at it. Manchester City are excellent at it. I think this is one of the things that the Albion are probably looking to develop over a longer period of time, using the academy, using the talent spotting to add value to players, even if they don't necessarily become first team regulars. Would the Albion be in a position where some, for want of a better phrase, bigger clubs will covet some of our players that have performed extremely well this summer? Well, we've already seen it with Karim Mitoma in terms of the interest from Saudi Arabia. I think he wants to focus his attention on his career elsewhere in terms of the World Cup coming up. There's the opportunity to play in Europe next season and so on. I can assure you that there are other players who are on the wouldn't mind him at our place list. And that operates in both directions, of course, because the Albion will have done their homework for this summer as well.
So I mean, with that in mind, I mean, we know the model is to sell someone for big money, not necessarily every summer. We didn't really sell anyone for massive money last summer. So does that mean that the likes of, I don't know, a Carlos Baleba could be at risk of being sold this summer?
There is no need to sell anybody. Does Tony want the money? No. I mean, he did take £70 million out of the club last year. He did withdraw, which he's perfectly entitled to do given the extent of the money that he's put into the club. But I think the other thing, which is sometimes used to berate the club, is that he's converted his loans into what we call convertible loans. So at some point in the future, he might effectively write off £200 million of what's owed to him. There's no PSR pressure. There's no pressure from Tony. So strong position to be in.
Because one thing that Tony is actually doing at the moment is actually spending an awful lot of money on infrastructure.
Yes, football's a really dumb industry in the sense that if I go to my local supermarket, if I go to my local department store, electrical store, they're open 363 days a year. Football grounds, to a large extent, are earning money, what, 25 days a year if they're lucky in terms of home fixtures. So it's a horrible phrase, trying to sweat the assets a bit more. Makes a lot of sense. If you look to see what they've done at Spurs, a fan who goes to a home match at White Hart Lane is now spending on average 50 minutes more within the footprint of the stadium, and that's 50 minutes more on a Saturday or Sunday when they're spending money. I think the Albion want to replicate that to a certain extent. It hopefully will address the elephant in the room, the one big issue at the Amex, which is that of leaving the ground and getting home, which the club has done all that it can. It is very much in the hands of Southern and the providers of services. But yeah, the Albion are the people who are ultimately we're going to watch, and they're on the receiving end of some of the criticism.
I was about to say, it's interesting you say that about sort of like the 50 minutes. The data says that that's what's happening at Spurs. And yet I'd have thought that Spurs had got that idea from us, in as much as when the Amex opened and realised that actually Falmer Station is not going to cope with, as it was then, 22,000 people, leaving immediately. Like I say, probably as far as most stadiums go, people leave within 5, 10 minutes of the final whistle going. But when you say 50 minutes, I mean, I don't know about you, Adi, but I don't think I've left the stadium 50 minutes after the final whistle for ages. And even then, it's probably usually a good hour and a half. So what you're looking at here, Kieran, what you're suggesting here is that on top of what we already do, you think that there's the possibility of being able to extend that even further?
Well, certainly, if you take a look at the ability of it's the terrace to absorb a 1,000 people in poor weather, and I think it's isn't it estimated to be 2,000 in good weather. I think what people might do is that they might walk out of the ground, take a look at the queue for the rail, and decide to stay on campus. But you've got to be able to offer people something, and I think what the club is doing, A, this is going to help revenue. And certainly, if you take a look at social media, both from Albion fans and from fans of other clubs, it is the one thing which is criticised. And it's not a blame game, it's an issue. And I think it's progressive. And I think Tony especially needs to be applauded for putting money into this to try to A, to help the club from its financial point of view, and B, to partially address this as a problem.
I mean,
I
because
mean, we sort of go on.
as an infrastructure thing, does this mean it doesn't come under PSR or the rules that have gone before?
But that's right. So all of the money that's going, I think it's £40 million. It's estimated to be costing in A, the extension, the additional features which are going to be offered within the ground, and the terrace. Project is all exempt from PSR. So again, there's going to be no additional pressure to make ends meet from player sales. Now, does that mean that no player sales will take place? No, that isn't. The player sale will take place if a club matches the Albion's valuation of a player, and that's a fantastic position to be in. That is negotiating from a position of strength, whereas we have seen other clubs in recent years not necessarily have to take haircuts, to have to take discounts, but perhaps not to be in a position to extract maximum value from from their talent.
Yeah, and we're back where we started with Yankuba Minter.
Yeah, there's a technical question. Well, something that comes up that I consider quite technical because I'm not 100% sure how basically to put it, but wasn't there a ruling recently? I don't know if it came from the courts or from the Premier League or from the Sporting Arbiter, whoever it might have been, about personal loans into a club can't now count towards PSR. I've probably got that completely arse about face. I hope you know the question I'm asking here, Kieran.
Yes, there was a case brought by Manchester City against the Premier League, where the Premier League has, by all accounts, made it difficult for Manchester City to, I think it's to renew the Etihad airline deal at the value that Manchester City had negotiated. And the argument is because Etihad Airways is part of Abu Dhabi, Manchester City have been able to charge a non-commercial value. They're charging £60 million for a deal which is probably only worth 45. That's the argument put forward by the Premier League. So Manchester City turned round and said, "Well, hold on, you've got clubs such as the Albion where Tony has lent the club 400 million quid and he's charging no interest. Well, that's not a commercial value. When you lend money, you'd normally expect to charge interest." So what the Premier League has done as a result of this, and this is where I do think that they've really tied themselves in knots, is they said, right, under those circumstances, even though Tony's not charging any interest, we're going to pretend that he is for PSR purposes. So we've got an imaginary interest being charged, and it does make things somewhat farcical. But that has huge implications because that rule doesn't apply if a club is in the championship. So if a club gets promoted from the championship, its PSR calculation effectively has to be revisited. And again, I'm in contact with some high-profile sports lawyers on a regular basis, just for general chit-chat
Of
purposes, of
course,
course.
because you enjoy tea together, don't you?
Well,
And a
there's a
Marmite
lot to be
sandwich.
learned, and there is a concern, and I think the my main concern, certainly from talking to some of my learned friends, is when is the first instance going to be of a referee making a decision, which then leads to a legal case. And if that, and if we go down that route, and to be fair, America's a very litigious society, but it's never entered into the realms of NFL and NBA and so on. But talking to some of the lawyers, it could arrive because the legal system is different here in Europe.
That would just be like sport eating itself, though, wouldn't it? That'd be just ridiculous.
Well, that's the well, thing is, it has happened. Well, there are times when the law has actually then, I mean, most famously is Mark Bosman taking, I think, was it Lille, to court, because they wouldn't release him from his contract, even though he was, or he wouldn't release him from his player registration, even though he was out of contract, and they were demanding a fee. And you think, hang on, this isn't fair. As we know, I mean, people no longer talk about he's been released on a Bosman, but we do know what it means, and that's where that was a major piece of, and then there's the whole thing with well, I say EU laws. Now, obviously, we're not part of the EU, but a lot of our trading, Albion's trading people are part of it, and then the whole notion you got the whole notion of. Transfer fees are they don't they come under something like slavery laws?
It's restraint of trade. I
Freedom of
interviewed
movement,
Sean, I think Jean-Louis Dreyfus is the name. So I've interviewed
isn't
the Bosman lawyer, and there has now been a ruling broadly in favour of players, which has meant that I think potentially UEFA and FIFA have to go back to their rule book to make sure that players are not being disadvantaged. Because let's say that you've got a player, let's take Cole Palmer, and Cole Palmer decides that actually he doesn't particularly enjoy playing at Chelsea. He's been there 2 seasons. Real Madrid want to sign him. Chelsea say, well, we want £200 million for his services in a way to try to prevent him moving. Is that a restraint of trade if he wants to go? Does that mean that there has to be a new formula determined for the calculation of what an appropriate transfer is? And if so, how is that formula going to be calculated? So there's a lot of moving parts, and anybody who made the very, very wise decision of going into sports law 20 years ago, which was then considered to be a niche, practically non-existent industry, has found themselves in the eye of the cyclone.
Similar to people who go into sports finance, I
Yeah,
guess.
well, yeah, I couldn't
So
possibly.
with all the news that's come out about, the Albion's figures and what have you, can you give us a flavour of the kind of the underlying trend? I remember we had this conversation a year ago, and I think I said to you, look, supposing it all goes wrong, how long therefore until the bubble bursts? And you said, oh, we're talking a good 2 or 3 years. Is the Albion in as good a shape, say, now than it was a year ago when they released last year's figures?
I would say that they're even stronger position, because of the continued ability to monetize the playing roster. Horrible, horrible phrase that. And I think that they have recruited very wisely, in the sense that if Jorginho, if João Pedro, you look at the number of young players, John Paul Van Hecke, these are all young players who would attract significant prices. The biggest asset that the club has got, however, remains Tony Bloom and Paul Barber, because I think Tony sets the overall vision, and Paul is excellent at applying it and implementing that on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, well, if I can sort of gun to your head then, Kieran, marks out of 10 for Tony Bloom's leadership then.
Tony Bloom's leadership, I think it's got to be an A plus, because if you look at what he inherited, which was a club with no stadium, with no guided plan, in terms of the aim of the club is to have the capacity to be in a top 10 position on a regular basis. Tony has been proved right again and again. We are, in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup for what, the third time in 5 years, potentially. We've got a good chance of progressing further in that competition. I was having a conversation with a well-known comedian and Crystal Palace fan earlier today on another podcast, and I think we both came to the conclusion that the worst possible FA Cup final would be Brighton Hove Albion versus Crystal Palace.
Yes, it would.
It might be a semi-final, yeah, Kieran.
It might be, but just whatever happens, we want to avoid them.
I
It
think
would just
that's
be
true.
because if you offer me at the start of the season 2-1-1 draws against Palace, I'd snap your hand off. It means we haven't lost to Crystal Palace. There
Yeah.
has to be a loser.
Well,
And
it means your relationship with Kevin's a lot better as well. Let's face it. And speaking of Kevin, of course, that's Kevin Day from the Price of Football podcast, which he does with Kieran every week. Where can you find the Price of Football podcast, Kieran?
on any good podcast app, so
Yeah.
Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the various such, and we do live shows as well. So we're doing one up in Liverpool this week. We're going to Rotherham in April, and we're in talks with other clubs, both domestically and abroad. And we try to do it at prices which are competitive, because ultimately it's hypocritical for me to campaign in terms of the prices at West Ham and Spurs at Manchester United if we try to rip people off ourselves.
That's the price of football, price of football.
That's
In,
right.
indeed. But that's all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Kieran Maguire. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailie Packham, and this has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Let's hope we can get that Fulham hoodoo off our back, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye.
One for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl, four for a boy, five for silver, six for gold, seven for a secret never to be told. Eight to wish and nine a kiss, ten is a bird you must not miss. One for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl, and four for a boy. suburban.